GP surgery, a police station.
Yeah. Okay, Karen, good question about sort of newcomers to the area and making sure they get the information. Ian,
did you want
Colin,
if I give you the mic and then you can, the person is talking.
Talks into the mic, right, okay.
I think I think it comes back to one. I don't think in this room we can fix that question. And I think that's logical. And I think there's some. Sorry, you're going.
I was just going to say developers do welcome packs because for a local nature reserve, I've given them information about something we were doing there and they were going to put it in the welcome packs. So there's an opportunity there if you badge it somehow.
I think the one for me and living in Bognor is once a month through my door. And this is where I think just from today and just seeing everybody's kindness about this, and again, I do believe it's a fantastic document, this needs to go in those parish newsletters. Not this, but an ability to find it, ability to get it. When Bursted in Focus comes through my door, I do look at it, because actually it's interesting to know what's going on in my locality. It's interesting to know what's happening, interesting to have any councillor changes, and just the general gossip. Yes, probably 60% of it is advertising, but that's how they pay it and how it gets delivered free. So actually, if there's one thing I'm going to take away today, is I need to find out what these and who these parish newsletters are. Probably, they're all probably produced by the same one or two companies, so finding that way in is probably going to be easier than going to each parish. But if there's one thing I do need to do today, and I will take it on, I think someone said, why is that not given to everybody? I totally agree. Because, again, I've said it so many times, Michael's team at CDC, our team at West Sussex, Crawley Borough, have all probably spent tens of thousands of pounds producing something similar, but a single leaflet about flooding, a single leaflet about fire, when actually there's a one-stop shop there. I did speak about it. Citizens Advice Bureau were very, very keen to host these. But again, each Citizens Advice has their own little areas. So Luca, who does Aaron, was very keen to host these. And again, that's just another thing that just needs to carry on rolling. Yeah, come on.
Oh, yeah, I live in Bognor as well.
Hello.
Sorry, can I just pass that one on? Because I know you're Liz Mack, so yeah. That's... I don't have to say that.
Thank you. I live in Bognor too, and people are already doing this. People are organising. We have the really wild Bognor and Felpham group. We've got 350 members, and it's about coming together and organising things like talks so people know what's happening, and also encouraging people to grow their own food, because this is what's happening now. Seed swaps, everything like that, but it's the councils that can help us. For example, the National Emergency Briefing film that's coming out, that will be out on 7th of April. Chichester, they're already showing it here, but if we could go through the councils and they could show it,
absolutely,
that would be so useful, so people know what's coming.
Yeah, so I'm not aware of that video. I would love to find it. I'd love to share it if I can give
National
you...
National Emergency Briefing, Colin.
Because actually, that's so easy to get our comms teams just to share it on social media.
Exactly.
I know that is only a West Sussex County Council, but no, that's
exactly.
Quite
also,
a quick win.
Sorry, also in Worthing, they have a crew, the Climate Resilience Hub. If every parish, every place had a climate resilient hub like them, they've set up together through the communities, that would also go some way to coordinating what's coming.
Yeah. Just speaking to the lady behind about crew, that just screams already a community emergency hub hybrid, because you've already got the structure, you've already got the committee, you've already got the access, you've already got the people, and all of a sudden, you've got a multi-faceted approach to the same common goal. People come to you for information. And all of a sudden, you're just widening that information. The Community Hub programme, that was what I was saying about earlier. I'm, like I say, more than happy to talk about...
Thank you very much for giving me your card. It hasn't got a name on it.
Yep, that...
Isn't that actually a card that talks about the climate emergency?
No, the reason why I gave you the card was to contact myself about possibly being a community hub. That was the conversation we had.
Right.
Yeah. And that comes through to our inbox. And then we can look to expand that whole conversation. Because if you've already got premises, people, structure, and in that structure, you're going to have amazing people that have lived and breathed lots of different things. A gentleman in the Apt one we did the other day had set up community resilience places in Iran. So already there is an absolute expert. That's probably even better than our team and myself. All of these people live in your communities and are part of your communities group, aren't they?
Okay, with one question here from Diana Morgan.
Yes. Well, first, an aside to them, the suggestion of crew, they've only just found permanent premises, I think, after a while, without a home, so I'm not sure if they're particularly equipped to, at the moment to be a hub, but I'm sure they would be. My other point was there are at least two of them in the room who are WI members, and that would be a brilliant place to hand out the booklets. These two of us are climate ambassadors as well, so...
On a slight tangent, I spoke about the Sussex Resilience Forum earlier. I'm also the chair of the Sussex Voluntary Resilience Partnership, co-chair, which is a pan-Sussex group of, best way to describe it, voluntary responders, British Red Cross, etc. I took it on in October, and if I'm really, really honest, the membership is quite low. Going back 5, 6, 7 years ago, the WI were part of that group. We meet quarterly, and all it is to almost network, pass information on, talk about campaigns that are happening, talk about things that are coming up. So again, if anybody wanted to contact, I did spam, and apologies if it may have gone to different inboxes, I spammed about 500 agencies just before Christmas, just using open source information, so it would have gone to generic inboxes, around potentially partnering or just coming into that group. So I have had quite a few responses from them, and brand new people, the Rapid Relief Team, which is a local charity, that they've come on board, and already what they're potentially offering in the charitable sector is phenomenal in terms of emergency response. So it is happening, and again, I would absolutely love for the Women's Institute to come on board, because it's a great place for people to network, and it's a pan-Sussex. You might be doing something in Chichester that Rother or that Hastings are not doing, and they take it from you, and all of a sudden you're building a resilient Sussex.
Okay. Before going on a bit, as it's been mentioned, the National Emergency Briefing, Transition Down Chichester will be having an event on the 16th of April, which is a Thursday evening, 6:34, 7 o'clock showing, in the Assembly Room in Chichester. And that'll be followed, hopefully, by a presentation. We're going to invite the MP to come and say what she's been doing in Parliament on these particular issues, and we'll be inviting representatives from each of the main political parties who are competing for the new Mayor of Sussex to come along and say what they would be doing as well in response to that film. And that film is quite harrowing in some way in terms of letting us know where things stand globally and how we might be affected by it. So I've interrupted just to promote that, but Polly, you were next on
the
hand show.
Again?
16th of April. Thank you. Hi, my name's Polly. It's completely left field question.
Go for it.
And because I haven't seen it mentioned anywhere, I thought, oh, bang it in. The roundup for the what's happening for people and from the very local community, which is brilliant. I'm just wondering, as we live in a very agricultural area, and I'd love to see it in your little booklet, if you're liaising with farmers and stock keepers, when something kicks off, are you liaising, or is there a forum or a network or a framework for liaising with farmers and how to deal with stock and animals that might be implicated in some horrific event?
Yes, so where I kind of double hat and also involved in the fire service, okay. We have a rural engagement officer. His name's Ben. Some of you may have come across Ben. Ben Applin is his name. So his job is around that whole rural affairs. He's very much involved in all of the farmers' unions, goes to a lot of the farmers' meetings, and when incidents happen that are agricultural. So the East Grinstead water outage is an example. It wasn't just humans affected, animals, livestock needed water. So he kind of came on board to assist with that connectivity. The fire crews can still drive around and find out areas that needed doing, but he kind of gave us that connectivity. So yes, we do have someone.
Did you have it mentioned on one of the areas, yep, that you were looking at, that you were aware of?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, of course. No, thank you.
Michael Pierce. Hi, I'm Mike. I'm from CDC. I know a lot of you in the room, and I think I'm probably the person that the climate component might come to more readily. But a question for you, Ian, and I don't mean to put you on the spot. It's just something that pricked my ears up, kind of thing. With, inverted commas, the elephant in the room of LGR, your point that I think was very well made, of that parish council localized link point moving upwards in the sort of hierarchies, I've sort of heard from the other side, from parish councils themselves, in a sense almost a fear that LGR might degrade that connection. Just wanted to get your input on that, if you've got any views.
I could give someone just said, what's LGR? So local government reorganization. So to explain LGR in a nutshell, at the moment we have a West Sussex County Council and we have a district council layer. Lots of other counties have a unitary, a single layer of councils. And the idea is that's what we are going to. There's lots of different competing councils with ideas and models as to what they want to do. Do you split it that way? Do you split it that way? The one that seems to be the most preferred is that West Sussex, East Sussex will stay the same and Brighton and Hove will stay the same. That's seemingly what it's going to go, but there's lots of different, we still don't know. There's lots of different models. I know that there was a land grab is the wrong way to describe it, but a land grab from some councils to try and broaden and to make bigger. So we're still waiting for the final decision, and it could be anything. And that's going to have an impact on the elections as well, on a sideshow. If I can be really honest, and this is a personal view, the relationships we have with our districts and borough colleagues, I was on a National Resilience webinar and someone from Worcestershire County Council have just gone through local government reorganisation, and he said it's the most horrific thing he's been through, and you would be a colleague from the old district council and I'd be a colleague from West Sussex, and we pass each other in the corridor and do not talk to each other because of history, whatever. This is only a personal, if it's video, please come back and shoot. I think the relationships we have with our districts and borough colleagues shouldn't go down that route. I get there's going to be politics, I get there's going to be issues, and being frankly and openly, there will be job changes, is the best way to describe it. I'm not talking about redundancies and cuts. But I think the relationships we have are very, very strong. And I'll actually, even though Michael's in the room, say that the relationship with Chichester and Arran is extremely strong. And that's a positive. I guess having a headquarters in Chichester helps with that. But this is just me and all of my experiences. All of the districts and boroughs are extremely helpful. I do get some are less financially secure than others. Again, Chichester is completely out of that conversation. But I hope it does work because there is some logic to it. I just hope it doesn't become another... For those unaware, do you remember the regional fire control project in Fareham? That we were all going to go to Fareham and seven fire services were going to come in, and then John Prescott canned it because people were saying, why are you making something regional when actually the key to a 999 call is local information? Yeah. And everyone's saying it's never going to work, and all the, yeah, it's going to work, and then it never worked. And actually what they've got now in Surrey, having worked there for a long time, is very, very good, and it works really, really well because you've got West Sussex staff, East Sussex staff, Surrey staff who live there, travelling up. There's people in Chichester that still work there now, and you get that local information.
Okay, Debbie Carr.
Thank you. Hi, thank you very much. Ian, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry if somebody's already asked this question because I've been haven't been totally listening in because I've been out there. It's a climate emergency. I know you're a climate emergency officer. How do we engage people who don't believe in climate emergency, in the big climate emergency? I know it's a big question.
The
other thing I just wanted to say is, with all the rainfall, you know, we've had massive rainfall, why don't we put more ponds, more ways of gathering the water around our district?
I'm not a climate officer, David is, which is a shame that he's gone, he had to go to climate, but there is some stuff there, because I actually think the climate awareness and conspiracy theorists. I love going down rabbit holes personally and just finding nuts and bolts and seeing if any of it's true sort of thing or not true and just getting involved in it. But I think it's the same as resilience. I mentioned about grab bag. You speak to someone about get a grab bag and actually you've then got to justify why you're telling someone just to be safe and secure, why you're telling someone just to be organised and have some elements of planning. And that's exactly the same for climate. I live in Bognor, so Bursted Brooks is really, really close to me. And that, I remember as a kid playing around the next, it was a floodplain, it's probably dangerous, I probably caught something, but playing around in the ditches when it was raining. And that always floods and always rains. And even me, I'm no planner, I've got no logic to it. I don't understand why you would put a house on there because of it. But that's where people become sort of sceptical, don't they? Because actually, I'm sure some people will say, is it real? Because you wouldn't put a house on there. So actually, why should I believe in that? It's a tough one, because I think the only thing we can do is just keep passing that information and just growing that group. What you said about crew and what you're doing now, that's the way to do it. But I think it's the younger generation is the...
We need help.
Yeah.
And that's where councils and parish councils can step in and actually show those films, help us.
Those films are really interesting, and I'd look at that film as soon as I finish here, because I think that's really, really interesting, just to see how it is, and then chuck it to our comms team and say, actually, why can't we share this?
Yeah, sorry, I've got a couple more questions. Well, three, actually. Ben, you were first.
Hi. Thank you. I'm Benedict. I'm a Hunstan Parish Councillor. Something that sort of struck me when looking at your slides, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems quite a lot of it is relying on kind of pre-existing community groups and a lot of volunteers. And that's great when you've got communities that have like resources and excess time. The question I was going to ask is, do you have like a different strategy when engaging like working class communities? Like, I know lots of working class communities do have really strong community groups, but then equally, I know, especially people my age that are kind of in full-time work, you know, I have some amazing friends and they, you know, they're just exhausted. They haven't got time to do the volunteering that I do because I've got the privilege to work, like, you know, for myself, things like that. You know, I just worry that working class communities could kind of fall through a strategy like that. I wonder if you had like a different engagement strategy with those types of people or whatever.
We do, and we have a community engagement group, is the best way to describe it, within the fire service, who are looking at exactly what you're talking about, even going into faith leaders and all of that sort of thing. Because actually, I spoke earlier around Hyper, the Hampshire thing. The reason why that's become successful is because the leaders are engaged and then they disseminate that down to the youth. So we're looking at, and it's a 2 or 3 year project to look at how we potentially change how we look at doing something different or how we carry on what we're doing around community engagement. So yes, it is on our radar. The team in the fire service are very, very keen to do it, because actually, to talk about the fire service positively, it's quite a good in. If the police were leading on a community engagement strategy, with all due respect, when a police person arrives, there's possibly a hint of negativism, and ambulance is exactly the same. So there is a community resilience strategy. There is a paper going through once we sort of finish that, because you're right. The one thing that is definite is that the youth engagement is a completely different entity to even when I was a child. And there is something that possibly needs to change. So yes, it is on our radar, and there is work going through to try and look at how we...
What was that with the fire thing you mentioned?
Oh, it's in terms of...
Oh,
community engagement. It's a full community engagement strategy to go through to our senior fire leadership team in terms of a paper, as actually, this is what we've looked at, this is the data, and here are your potential gaps and flaws. We use the indices of deprivation maps as well. So again, as an example, if you're going into quite a rich area, no negatives, you will still communicate, but actually, your strategy might be completely different, because there might be elements of self-sufficiency versus, as you say, you're right, those that are less deprived.
Okay, thanks. I had four questions. So the first question.
Just come to me. Do you engage with faith leaders, whether they're Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, because they have access to huge numbers of people?
Yes, but I personally feel we can do better. Crawley, especially, this is a personal view, Crawley especially are very, very, especially with Crawley District Council and the fire service in terms of how we do. But this is something I've spoken about when I've taken over that role. The one thing I worry about is I could make this Sussex Voluntary Resilience Partnership a monster. And that then becomes actually ineffective. So hypothetically, 100 people come to the meeting virtually, it actually dilutes its worth. So actually it might be, if that does happen, that we then segregate it, which kind of you don't want to do, because then you kind of misinformation. So, but yes, faith leaders are absolutely on that community resilience strategy. We're already very much talking to those in Crawley.
In that particular area.
Yes, very much so, because of the demographic of the area, but we are fully aware that isn't the only place. So yes, they are on our radar. And it isn't just West Sussex County Council. All agencies, multi-agencies have the same sort of thing. Do you, as I say, CDC, is there faith leaders? Is there any, do you know of any?
I don't know.
No, but yeah.
There's a group here, I think. Right, so we've got another question here.
Yes, hello.
Hi, I'm a resident of Bosham, which has undergoing a terrible situation with constant sewage, raw sewage going into the harbour at the moment. And it has been happening now for well over 30 days. And we can all see the sewage in the harbour. People can no longer swim there. I haven't swum in this area for a long time now after having an ear infection. Now, today I received a planning application notification for a new 300 house development, which is well underway in Bosham, and it told us that they have to apply for new access to sewage, and because they cannot connect up to the sewage, and apparently they have a sinkhole where they're going to put it, and they're going to start off with one tanker a week, but they're saying that by the time the 30 odd homes that have already been sold are going to be occupied, it'll be 7 tankers a week. They don't know where they're going to go. Anyway, that's a little background thing about another problem we have there, but I'm really also concerned about, apparently they have discovered E. coli in the harbour, and I want to know, this is an emergency that's happening, you know, that we are going through all the time, and how do you approach that, and how are you going to tell people that they can't swim in the harbour?
If I can go full transparency, I cannot give you an answer because it is absolutely not in my expertise. I do not know the information. I've saw other ones online where the tankers would need to be every 6 hours. This isn't Bosham, this is somewhere else in Sussex. That's just me looking in the news. I'm really sorry, but I cannot give you an answer on that. And that's me being honest. I've got no issues in being honest because on a personal view, I don't agree with it, but that's my personal view.
Can I just say, yeah, in support of my question right at the start, it's down to the developer's responsibility
to ensure that the sewage is, yep.
And the owners, the new owners are educated. And I might just say, I live at Gravingwell, and basically.
But no, you are right. And the one I was talking about, the water board had said no. No, you cannot, because the infrastructure is not capable to take on, which sounds exactly the same as what you're talking about, and the developers still carried on.
Yeah.
But surely that's a matter of planning.
Yeah, as I say, I've got no expertise on planning. I'm just giving personal opinion from reading the news, and that's not me being negative.
I think we're getting into territory which is, you know, is very important.
Yes, can I just
very,
just
very important, very controversial. Okay.
Can I just...
That's great, because it sounds like E. coli is an issue.
But just a question, is there liaison with the Environment Agency around this?
Environment Agency, Ward Counties, but getting honest answers back from... You've got to read between the lines. Yeah. It's a battle we're currently...
It's a dirty business.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to move us on. There are issues which are really important, but there's another place to discuss them, and there are really big issues that need meeting of its own, really. Yeah. Can I just pass you on to Sarah?
I wanted really to reply to a couple of things. First of all, to Benedict, that yes, working class communities might not have the time, etc., but what people living in who don't live in their own homes and are renting, they do have the support of housing associations. That's another layer of support. And although housing associations like Hyde are quite stretched, yep, and have become even more stretched recently, that is another layer of mechanism. And the other comment in reply to somebody about LGR, we don't know what's going to happen exactly about LGR, but there is talk of having some sort of in between this large unitary, whether it be one or two, and the parish councils. Whether that neighbourhood forum or whatever continues to exist once funding runs out, but at least there's the aspiration of having some in-between link. So I think that's quite hopefully positive, at least for the early days of
just
LGR.
Back to what you said there, it reminds me of Saxon Weald and all of that. So we have linked in with Worthing Homes around this campaign, and we are going to as many housing associations as possible, because, as you say, they are stretched, but they are a fantastic in as well.
Okay, other questions that I've missed? Yes.
Thanks. I know what the answer to that, your answer to this question is going to be, but I'll ask it.
Yes, please.
Anyway. As everybody could agree, we are living through an absolute environmental disaster every which way you look. Now you could say, well, that's nothing to do with this, but my argument would be it is in a sense that some of the issues are actually being caused at the lowest level and they could be fixed. Some are being caused at a higher level, they could be helped to be fixed by the people at the lower level. If your answer is, I can't deal with that, it's not my responsibility, then could you tell me how we deal with these issues? How do we get the messages to people that can make a difference? My feeling is that nobody's listening up there. These issues to do with sewerage, they're not unique to Chichester.
No, not at all.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
But building houses on greenfield sites, which are valuable natural places for wildlife or for whatever it happens to be.
And
that is a resilience. All of those are resilience issues, and that's what we're actually talking about here.
Correct.
If you don't get that ready, fixed, then everything else is off.
Correct, you're absolutely right.
I wouldn't want you just to stand there and say it's nothing to do with this. How do we get this message up? Who do we contact? How do we get it upwards so that people are actually listening?
There are. Yeah. It's not going to get you the fix. Those two links I showed you around reporting flooding and reporting problems isn't going to get you your fix. But I do also believe, I think you mentioned it earlier, there are people that don't bother reporting, and I'm not saying this isn't going to get you your fix, but don't bother reporting because nothing ever happens or it's someone else's problem. The one thing I will say, I'm not a planner, I have no authority on planning, and I totally agree with what's being said here. Personal, not professional.
Okay, can I just interrupt a moment, a helpful interruption, I hope, because we have on the front row here the Deputy Leader of Chichester District Council, who's also Portfolio Member for Environment, and we've touched on a big issue to do with sewage and planning, and I just wondered whether you wanted to say a little bit how the District Council tackles these big issues.
I can do. Hi. Where do we even start? Politicians are nearly all aware of the problems. So I think we can say that. These are massive problems. But firstly, politicians are aware of them. I think local government can do some things to help. Some of that is just lobbying, and certainly the district council does a lot of lobbying, a lot of demanding and requiring representatives from Southern Water and from the government to come and talk to us about these issues. I'm sure it's happening across the country as well, but we certainly do that. And planning is one of the most weird, contradictory processes in that the actual system is almost the opposite of what everyone understands by the word planning. It's more trying to catch balls that are juggling all over the place. There's very little power to actually plan within the planning system. So I don't know if it's the example that was referred to earlier about all these tankers, but there's a site in the Manhood Peninsula where the district council refused planning permission for a site because there was no possibility of connecting to the sewers. It was overturned at appeal. The developers have now come back and said, oh, we can't connect to the sewers. Can we tanker instead? The district council is not allowed to say, no, you can't. But what it can do and what it did do is say, show us how that's going to work. The developer couldn't. And so the district council has then said, well, in that case, tough. No one is allowed to move into those houses. It's your problem. But I don't know how that's going to turn out. But a couple of things I did want to add. One was, there was a question about climate denial. So one thing I think, ironically, one of the ways to deal with it is not to politicise it. I think there's a lot of controversy, there's a lot of division, lots of kind of social, what's the word? Like, people love having fights, particularly online, and it's really unhelpful. So I think rather than bashing people over the head about climate denial, talk to them about flooding. Don't say this is happening because of climate change. Maybe drop that in there. But if you talk to people about protecting their homes from flooding, virtually everyone is very, very keen on that idea. And once you've got them engaged on protecting their homes from flooding, they're much more open to hearing about what the causes of that flooding are and what the solutions. And the solutions are often to stop destroying the climate and stop destroying local biodiversity and local nature. So, yeah. I second that. Oh, sorry, so encourage people to attend the carbon literacy training that Mike runs.
But my point was that there are a lot of things I understand all the stuff at the highest level, but I think that there are lots of things that the residents of Chichester could do down at this level, which would facilitate more respect for the environment. Lots and lots of things I can think of that individuals could do to do their little bit.
Yep.
If we all did these little bits, it would add up to something significant. Who knows what might come from that?
I mean, I think that's where climate action networks can really help.
Yeah.
And in some parts of the area, there are already really good groups, in others there aren't. But
all these new houses they build, how many of them have got swift boxes on them?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I, off the top of my head, I don't know, but there are rules within the planning system. No, but there are rules in the planning system that cover those sorts of things. It's not my area of planning. I don't know what the requirements are. I'm pretty sure it happens. But just going to say that Mike's role is largely to support existing climate action groups and help people that are interested set up new ones, but also, and I think this is crucial, is helping groups that aren't climate groups but that have some sort of interest in the climate. So you've mentioned scouts, mentioned faith groups, flood action groups, anywhere where there are people that care about their society, there will be people that care about the climate, and those people can help those groups which have another focus, whether it's training kids to play football or whatever. It's all those other groups that are the ways to kind of spread really positive messages about what people can do and what groups can do to help with this thing. So,
okay. Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Can I just quickly ask Jonathan? Sorry. I did mention about ponds, but because I was thinking about the drought we had last year, And there was no, I mean, we, and people still hosing down their cars, washing their, you know, their plastic lawns. And yet wildlife was probably gasping for, you know. So if we just had a system where we put some more water, I don't know where, how long it would last, but like in Oaklands Park, where you have that, where the, obviously where the lavant comes up, that'd be an ideal. I know it's all to do with health and safety in children, but I think children, and they don't have a barrier across the sea, do they? When children go to the beach, you know. So I think we just have to think about not only ourselves, but other little creatures that live in this world. Sorry.
I can just very briefly say, I mean, ultimately it's up to landowners to install ponds. The district council has a project to improve the health of the chalk streams, and that is involving creating new ponds, or rather, where possible, looking at places where there used to be historic ponds that have been filled in and turning them back into ponds. So maybe the people working on that experience will carry over and help others that are interested in new ponds as well.
Thanks very much. I've got one, two.
Well, it's another question for you, Jonathan. Do you have the power to direct the way house building is done? So, for instance, you know, so many of the new houses got hard standing for cars because they're so far away they need two cars to get anywhere. Can you specify that it's not hard standing, that it can absorb all that new rainwater? Can you specify that there should be water collection systems in the new houses, as well as obviously solar panels and stuff? Have you got any powers like that?
Yes, but they're sort of national powers. They're national standards rather than local powers. So, and again, planning is not my area, but there are national rules that say when you are developing a site, you're not allowed to make flooding from that site impacting other places any worse than it already is. Yes. New developments are not required to fix problems that exist. And that means that when developments are being built, they will install things like suds and soakaways, and that does impact what materials are used. I say not to prevent flooding, but to ensure that the flooding doesn't get any worse than it was already. I'm summarising what I think national rules are. Yeah, I agree.
You just need a sandbag in your shed so that when the flood comes, you've already got the infrastructure in your own local house to sort yourself out. So you know that if the flood levels come up above your French windows, for example, you're protected. Just simple things like that. And I just think it's a shame that we can't use this opportunity to change policy for benefit of climate change on an individual level, and then bring everyone together in these community hubs.
I know you're running out of time, so I've just one more thing which is actually quite positive. The Chichester Harbour Investment and Adaptation Plan, I don't know whether anyone's heard of that, but basically it's the current planning rules are preventing people from rebuilding collapsing sea defences around Chichester Harbour, because if you build a sea defence, that will have an impact on nature. So basically, as sea level rises, we're losing really, really important habitats, and you can't get planning permission if you're going to destroy some of these really important habitats. So this Chichester Harbour Investment and Adaptation Plan is a multi-year project to work with communities around the entirety of Chichester Harbour to basically identify places that need protecting, identify other places where there are opportunities for habitat creation, so that you can link those two things together and say, here's a village that needs protecting, we're going to rebuild a seawall here, and to environmentally compensate for it, we're going to allow the sea to come in here and create more tidal habitats, for example. Part of this process is about helping communities come up with I think they're called trigger points or strategies for the future. So basically, communities will know that if sea level rises by X amount of millimetres and there's a certain number of floods, then we will get Wellington boots on. If it gets X more millimetres, that's the point at which it triggers the request for money to rebuild the seawall. If it gets above X number of metres, that's the point at which we evacuate everyone. So the idea is to have, around the entirety of the harbour, everyone knowing what the plan is, or rather what the plans, plural, will be for decades to come, so that individuals and communities can plan to make themselves resilient. And a lot of that will include how to flood-proof your house, because in the short term, that's going to be appropriate and necessary. But in the longer term, it's also about identifying places which are going to need more substantial support than that. So I think that would be really positive.
That's where the work that we're trying to do on the Climate Action Network side of things across the district, to link Climate Action Networks up across the district and expand the impact that they all have, is so that, for example, the flood, the home level flood mitigation strategies that are part of the harbour strategy, those apply wherever you are being flooded. Those sorts of strategies, and it's then being able to disseminate that information through a network that can get down to sort of grassroots levels.
Okay, I've got one last question which I'm going to take here because we're going over time. Sorry about the delay.
Make it a good one.
My name is Philip Maber. Yeah, in 1994, Chichester flooded. There were The army was brought in. There were green goddesses in East Street pumping out. There were big, huge pumps brought over from Holland. I worked for the Environment Agency then, and I spent a few days down in the nuclear bunker down below West County. Yeah, and I just wondered whether those plans were still in place, because that worked reasonably well. The only problem was that they decided to bring in lots of managers from all over the country, and they had to fly around the area to get to know it in helicopters. And but overall, you know, everything came together within a few days quite well.
Was it called Operation Badminton?
I don't remember.
I think that's what it's called now, and I think it does still exist. So it's called Operation Badminton. My boss was involved in that, Martin Funnell.
Right.
So he got an MBE for his work around the Chichester flooding. But yes, it is. I've also, and this is something that I've done personally, so I've just written flooding tactical plans for rope walk in Littlehampton. South Terrace is due to be done tomorrow, and because of situations that's happened, just to give information of people attending incidents with flooding. And yeah, badminton is what its operation name is called. But yes, it still is in existence. It still works. There's still levels that when the lavant gets to A, B and C, certain mitigation is put in, certain things are stood up, certain things are stood down. And yes, very much still referred to. This is just a personal view. Eventually, when those people that lived and breathed it working there, someone who gets an automatic notification that the lavant's gone to A, they just do it like that. You've just got that risk that experience will eventually wane, but the plans are there to hopefully stop that from happening. But yes, it is very much still there.
Okay, yeah, well, thanks. And I live up in Singleton Forest, and there's obviously a huge and ever-growing fire risk, especially with the massive oil site that's in the middle of it, emitting methane and everything. And I can't not mention active travel provision when all these new buildings are built and thoughts are made.
Yeah, that's...
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Yeah, thanks everybody for your questions. Sorry, Mike, I'm going to have to sort of close now as we're at 4:05. Can I just thank everybody for coming and for all your questions? I hope you've got some of the responses you were looking for. Some of the issues are much bigger than this meeting can cope with. But the advantage for us in Transition Town Chichester, we've got a really good set of comments and opinions that we can think about and how best to take them forward. I think there's quite a lot of work here to do. And I'm conscious one of the questions about perhaps having more of a presence in Chichester, one of the empty shops where we can actually have an emergency centre. That may be something we look at in more detail. I think it's quite clear that many of us feel somewhat powerless to address some of the big issues that are happening around us, all the housing in inappropriate places, all the lack of infrastructure for sewage, etc. But set against that, there's some really good, positive proposals locally that Jonathan talked about in the Chester Harbour adaptation area. And then it's also been very heartening to hear that there are a lot of parishes that are doing something. Perhaps they need refreshing their plans and need to update them, and they need to make them continually viable, because personally, having had a look at some of them, you know, they've got the wrong MP and they were made in 2014 and or whatever it was. They just need updating, but they've got the principle of what needs to be done in emergency incorporated, because they followed a sort of set pro forma for undertaking these plans. Those plans were, or the pro forma was unveiled by government in about 2016, I think. So the risks that we've now got in terms of cyber and emergencies to do with climate change have to be added into those, and the whole thing reworked. And I think it's part of what we would like to do in the Climate Action Network, part of Transition Chichester, is to try and push that process on a bit, get a little bit more traction to it, work with the county and the district and others, see how we can actually be helpful in that process. Lastly, I'd like to thank our speakers.
Thank you.
Ian, and two people from the district council, as well as their leader, deputy leader, sorry.
Haven't launched a
coup. No. Thanks very much, and thanks for taking all the questions as well. There will be a recording of this event in due course, so that's why I'm holding this microphone still. And it will be on our website, so look out for that. And also look out for the publicity on seeing this national emergency briefing film on Thursday, 16th of April, at the Assembly Room. It's really worth seeing that, to really bring yourself up to date with where things stand at the moment. Please come along to that.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.